Welcome to Hey Girls, the podcast. We use this space to share women's experiences and women's perspectives on human rights and international justice in a way that will hopefully trigger your mind. Ours is a bi-weekly podcast of interviews and conversations. My name is Evelyn Ama Ankuma, your host. My guest today is Judge Salome Balungi Bosa of the International Criminal Court Appeals Chamber. Prior to joining the ICC in 2018, Judge Bosa held judicial positions at national, regional, and international courts, including the United Nations Mechanism for International Criminal Tribunals, the African Court on Human and People's Rights, and the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. Judge Bosa is chair of the Gender Mentoring Training Program for Judges, initiated by Africa Legal Aid. I am delighted to speak with her on gender-sensitive judging. Judge Salome Balungi Bosa, as we say in my native language, Akwaba, welcome.
Thank you.
Just over 2 years ago, Africa Legal Aid, AFLA, launched a gender-sensitive judging series in collaboration with a core group of female judges of international courts and tribunals. Of course, the training is for both male and female judges. You, Judge Bosa, have been an active participant in this program, and you are now the chair of the program. What have been your experiences with this program, and have you found the program to be beneficial?
I would like to say that I have benefited greatly from this program, because it addresses issues that we often overlook or don't even know about. It has been an eye-opener to all the judges, because the program deals with the gender aspects of judging. And these aspects are very important for ensuring that we deliver equal justice for males and females of the crimes that we try, victims of the crimes that we try. So it's very important for us to understand the context, the players, why they did what they did, what they did to the victims. That's also very important, as perceived by the victims, because we always rely on the other side, whereas the victims themselves have a different story to tell. So it's very important because it creeps also into our decision-making. And consciously, if we don't consciously address gender equality in judging. So this program has been very beneficial for us, the judges. And I would recommend that we widen it to include all judges, because right now it's only female judges, but we are all affected by this. And we have come to the realization that there are these intersectional, discrimination that affects both males and females. And we need to understand this in our assessment of the facts, in our decisions, in our convictions, in our sentencing, as well as in our reparation orders. So it has been a very important program for us, and we hope that it will continue.
Thank you very much, Judge, and thanks for pointing out that it is not only for female judges, but also for male judges. And of course, we will engage male judges in as soon as possible. In fact, at the last meeting to coincide with the ASP session, the president of the International Criminal Court, Judge Hofmanski, he participated, he spoke at our meeting on gender diversity and the Rome Statute system, as did you.
Yes, I do recall that. And we thank him very much for his participation.
Yes. Yes. So, Judge, what topic in the series have you found most interesting? Or what topics and why?
Well, all the topics have really been about gender discrimination, but they've targeted different groups, the victims, the counsel, the judges, how we, you know, we handle and perceive it, the prosecutor, and so on. I've been more interested in the role we judges can play to ensure that we come to grips with this discrimination and address it squarely when we are dealing with a case in the courtroom, as well as in the judgments that we write. So, well, we have had various speakers. Dr. Gray gave a very important paper on this, and I think it launched us very well into this subject. It was the most interesting because it was an eye-opener as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so that actually she was talking, Rosemary Gray and, you know, others have spoken about the complexities of gender identity.
Yes.
Is the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court fit for purpose in terms of the complexities of gender identity?
Well, I think the framers of the statute were very conscious about this. And they gave the court latitude to interpret the statute in accordance with human international law and internationally recognized human rights. So then it's upon the judges to find out or to elaborate on these particular aspects, because we are forbidden to indulge in any discrimination under when we are interpreting and applying the statute. It's clear in Article 21. So the framers of the statute were very clear on this. They were also very clear in the preamble that the offenses that we try target women and children disproportionately, and that they suffer a lot in these conflicts and other oppressive situations. So I think it's upon us to pick up on these pieces of legislations or provisions and expound on them and interpret them so as to get rid of this vice of discrimination against women. We must make sure that our judgments do not actually traumatize witnesses more by failing to detect the discrimination that is against victims of sexual violence. We must ensure that the judgment gives equality to both male and female. We must ensure that female counsel are treated fairly and, you know, with dignity before us, same as men. So the duty really is now upon the judges to ensure that we treat people equally in accordance with international human rights norms and international law. And this also goes with those who are persecuted for various reasons, because people will be targeted for different reasons. That's why it's important for us to understand the context and to understand the communities in which the crimes were committed, and also the type of targeting that was done to the various people and how it affected them. Of course, this will be constrained by the charges that the prosecutor has decided to bring, but it's very, very important for us to understand that, because then we come to grips with the various dimensions of discrimination that are exposed by the facts and the context. And also we get to know who the perpetrators are and what their intentions were, what they intended to do, and how we should punish them.
Thank you very much for that, Judge. Not all countries accept different sexual orientation. For example, recently, Uganda. Should these differences in sexuality, in societal norms, render LGBTIQ plus persons less entitled to the protections of law?
I'll limit it to the context in which it appears before the International Criminal Court. If such persons were to appear before the court and the facts proved that they were discriminated or persecuted because of their gender or lack of it, then the court must address these facts and establish whether there was a persecution or not. And if persecution is established or other crimes like genocide or war crimes or whatever it is, then the courts should rise to the occasion because they must look at these people as human beings. It's forbidden for the court to entertain any discrimination of any sort based on any aspects that are mentioned in Article 21. That is all I can say about this.
Thank you, Judge. And in that connection, the term gender is continuously evolving. Do judges have an obligation to interpret gender in accordance with this development?
As I said, judges must pay attention to the context in which the crimes have been committed. They must understand the community in which the crimes have been committed. So if within that context, gender is playing out in a different dimension or, you know, another one, then the judges need to understand that because it will assist them to understand the types of crimes that have been committed, why certain people have been targeted for such, crimes, and decide, appropriately on how to punish the perpetrators. So it should be on a case-by-case basis and depending on what facts have come to light during that particular case.
So, for example, by using the principle of non-discrimination in the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court.
Yes. The judges are required to apply it. In fact, the statute is very, very categoric because it says that the application and the interpretation of law pursuant to this article must be consistent with internationally recognized human rights and without any adverse distinction founded on grounds such as gender, as defined in Article 7, Paragraph 3, age, race, color, language, religion, belief, political, other opinion, national, ethnic, or social origin, wealth, birth, or other status. So depending on the circumstances before the judges, I'm sure that the judges will be able to decide appropriately on what it is that they see before them.
Are anti-LGBTIQ plus laws in some countries, are these laws at odds with the letter and spirit of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court?
It is difficult to say, broadly, but if these laws are being used to persecute people in a context which falls within the crimes that this court has jurisdiction to try, then the court will have to look at that and address it within that context.
Okay, so obviously within the crimes that are Rome Statute crimes.
Yes. Yeah. This court has only, you know, jurisdiction to try, I think they are for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and aggression.
Yes. And are there any other gender-sensitive judging issues that the court needs to be aware of, that the court needs to pay attention to?
Yes, we have actually looked at how the court treats victims. We have looked at how the court treats female counsel. We need to look at how even the judges have talked about how they are treated by their male colleagues. Some, I think for counsel, even issues of leave for males and females has come up. And the presumptions of competence that are attributable to males vis-a-vis the females. All these are issues that we need to explore further and train on together with our male colleagues, so that when we sit down to hear a case, we ourselves are, you know, conscious that we have to be to render equal justice to everybody that appears before us, everyone, including in our own judgments.
So the ICC is an international court. So it's a court that you have people, judges from different backgrounds, different cultures. I can imagine that there are some cultural issues, cultural challenges, but then also gender challenges. So female judges at the International Criminal Court faced with intersectional discrimination themselves based on gender, based on their culture? Is this something that the judges, the female judges, are confronted with?
I don't know whether I can speak for every female judge. What I can say preliminarily is that right now we have equality, you know, between male and female, equal representation. We are 9 females and 9 males. So we are equal in representation. But as we have discussed before, this is not enough to ensure equal justice or equal treatment for everybody. So we have quite a number of policies that have been enacted on this matter. The female judges can speak for themselves. Some may have, encountered such discrimination, others not. But I must say that most of our male colleagues are quite courteous to female judges, and they do tend to listen to what we say, at least in my own court or my own chamber. So there are disagreements, of course. We can't agree on everything, and we try to be as courteous as possible when we disagree. And it's usually not because we think that the other person lacks competence or not. It will be an opinion on a legal matter. We try as much as possible to agree, but where it's not possible, we then agree to disagree courteously.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, but the judges are dealing with, you know, they're not only dealing with their fellow judges, they're dealing with other officials of the court and other stakeholders.
Absolutely.
For example, an African judge who was the vice president of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia told me that when she was a judge of that court and she wanted to start court early, the male registrar would not start court early. But then when one of her male colleagues wanted to start court early, the male registrar obliged. Are these some of the challenges? Do ICC judges experience such challenges as well?
Well, ICC judges work in different chambers. That is one thing I should say. We have the pre-trial chamber, we have the trial chamber, and the appeal chamber. I think it would be insubordinate for a staff member to refuse to set up a time on which the presiding judge agrees to hold the matter. they should act on the instructions of their judges. And normally the judges agree together that we will be available at this particular time to deal with this matter. Now, if a registrar or anybody in charge does not want to comply with that, I think it's a question of whether that staff is not contravening some of the rules that should govern his or her conduct. And I think the chamber that concerned would take up that matter as appropriate. I must say that I have not experienced such a thing myself.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for making that point. So in terms of equality, gender equality, gender-sensitive judging, approaches to female victims, approaches to female counsels, how the conduct of judges towards their fellow judges who are female, where do you see the ICC 5 years from now?
I think that the ICC will be in a better place because we have had a review of our operations. As you are aware, we have the independent expert report. Following that report, every organ has had to look at themselves and examine their operations and see where to improve. A number of things have been done to ensure, you know, improvement. Policies have been enacted about bullying and harassment, and it has also been. The principals also keep on reiterating that they are working towards equality, equal representation. Ombudsman has been appointed. The various fora have been reinforced to ensure that most of this conduct that would lead to problems is addressed. The judges have set up their own mechanism to deal with staff. There is the official one in the IOM. So we have a number of fora where people can go when they feel that they are pressed against the wall. So these policies, if properly implemented and internalized by everybody, should. And I'd forgotten one thing. The judges have also reviewed their code of conduct to include, to align with what the independent expert report recommends. So I think that we are set to see an improvement in the workplace culture, in the workplace atmosphere, and in the treatment of everybody, including judges inter se, and between judges and staff.
Thank you very much, Judge Salome Balungi Bosa, for speaking with me.
You are most welcome. And thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a good day.
You too. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We will continue to bring you women's experiences and women's perspectives on our journey to a destination called justice. Hague Girls, the podcast, triggering your mind.